What's stopping you from speaking exactly like a native speaker? It might not be your accent. It actually just might be your vocabulary. In the United States, a lot of people have accents and it's almost unnoticeable sometimes. But when people don't know the everyday phrases that Americans actually use in their conversations, sometimes their conversation might sound a little stiff or a bit foreign. In today's English lesson, I'm going to teach you 25 phrases that American English speakers actually use in their everyday conversations. Let's get started. The first phrase is a really common compliment that we tell people sometimes when one person has an idea and the other person has the exact same idea. And instead of just saying, "Oh, we have the same idea," we say, "Great minds think alike." So this means that we're thinking the same thing and you're kind of complimenting yourself if you say this, as well as the other person. Like, we are so smart, we have great minds, and we think the same.
Great minds think alike, then.
Do you say this phrase in your first language, great minds think alike? Because it is so common to say to another person here in the United States when you guys have the same idea or you were thinking about doing the same thing at the same time. So sometimes in a more casual conversation, I'll say, "What do you want for dinner?" And the other person says, "Pizza." I'll think, "I was gonna say pizza too." Great minds think alike. Let's go get some pizza. So this is a really common fun phrase that we use to compliment another person here in the United States. Did you know that sometimes in English, we call people guinea pigs? Now, this is not an insult to someone. We're not saying that they look like the animal or the rodent, guinea pigs.
You'll be my guinea pig and protege, eh?
But we're actually just saying that we're using them for a trial or trying something with the person that we're calling the guinea pig for the first time. So this comes from the idea that sometimes in like laboratory experiments, scientific experiments, instead of testing something on a person, we test it on an animal, like a guinea pig. So if you try out a new computer program or a new software at your work and nobody has used this process before, your boss might say, "Well, you're the guinea pig, so you'll have to let us know how it works or if it can get the job done." This means that you are like the trial person. We're using you to try it for the first time. Another very interesting phrase that we use in English that you might have not come across before is a lemon. We're not talking about the fruit, but we're talking about something that was built and it just has never worked. This is really common when someone gets a car and it has so many problems that the car company takes it back because they figure it was not built correctly. We call that a lemon. So some states in the United States, they actually have what we call a lemon law. So if you buy a brand new car, if in the first year or so many things break and go wrong, you can get your money back from that car because basically we're saying that car is so defective, it was not built properly. It was not designed properly. So if you get something, a product mainly, and it just never works, you can say, "Well, that one was kind of a lemon." Meaning it was very, very poor quality. This phrase is a really great phrase to use when someone is really incorrect about something and you don't want to just say, "Oh, you're totally wrong." Because sometimes that can come off as a little bit rude. Instead, in English, we'll say, "Well, I think you're just a little bit off base on this." This means you're not really thinking about this correctly, but it's kind of a more polite way to say it. Another way we can say it is if you are wrong about something, you can say, "Well, I'm just off base about this."
Please correct me if I'm wrong, Marcy. I don't want to be off base here.
So maybe you make an assumption about someone and you say, "Oh, I didn't think that you would like this, but I was totally off base." This means you were incorrect because it turns out the person actually liked the thing that you were talking about. When I was much younger, I thought living in a big city like New York City would just be so amazing and glamorous. But the first time I visited there, I figured out it's not all it's cracked up to be. Now, this is just my opinion, but I think that large cities are kind of noisy, kind of polluted, a little bit too crowded. Some people like that lifestyle, but for me, that's not it's all cracked up to be.
Loved. Yeah, well, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
This idiom is used when you want to say that something is not as good as it's described. A lot of times people will like a movie and they'll suggest it to you and you go and see the movie and you say, well, that movie was not all it's cracked up to be. So this is a really casual phrase. It's very informal to say that something was described better than it actually was. A lot of times people go to a college or a university and they start out, you know, in a certain program for a degree and they figure out it's not their true calling. In English, we use this phrase, a true calling, to describe what a person was born to do or what their skills best match. We usually use this phrase when we're talking about a certain career, or we'll say, oh, my true calling was to be a mother or a father.
Now that Murnie's found his true calling.
Some people will go to school, like myself, and they'll be trying to get a business degree, but then they'll realize that their true calling is to be in education and to be teaching people. This is exactly what happened to me. Or maybe you try to work in the corporate world, but you realize your true calling is to be a musician or an artist. This just means that that's where your skills are best suited. That feels like it's what you were meant to do. It's very natural. You are totally going to think I'm crazy for this next idiom, but American English speakers actually say this. If someone is out for blood, it means that they're doing things in order to seek revenge or in order to harm someone for something.
They're out for blood. You can't fool around.
So maybe this idiom is pretty popular when you're playing sports. The other team has a player that seems to not care if they're injuring people. They just want to win the game. You could say that player is out for blood. And it's similar to saying, you know, they're out for vengeance, revenge. If someone is doubting you, maybe they're doubting your abilities or they're doubting your knowledge, and you feel like, you know, why are you doubting me? Just try me. This is the phrase that we use, try me. So someone might be saying, oh, I don't think you know how to do this. You can say, well, try me. I bet I know how to do it.
Try me.
Look. Or if someone's saying, oh, I'm way too good at, let's say you're playing Scrabble. I bet that you can't beat me. Say, well, try me. Let's play. So this is just, you know, kind of a challenge. Like, you know, I bet I can beat you, or I bet I do know this thing. Try me. This next idiom is one of those phrases that has been used forever in the United States, and it's still used today. It can be said two different ways. Sometimes we say, don't cry over spilled milk, or there's no use crying over spilled milk. So this is a classic idiom. Maybe you have one just like it in your first language. That means, you know, don't worry about something very minor.
I don't cry over it. I appreciate it.
Right. And this idiom also suggests, you know, you can't change this situation. Don't cry over it. Don't worry about it so much. Just move on, clean it up, and keep going. So oftentimes, I literally say to my kids when they spill milk, there's no use crying over spilled milk. Don't worry about it. Let's clean it up. And next time, let's not spill. So we can use this idiom very often in English when someone breaks something or something small goes wrong. But we can't change the situation. Let's just clean it up and move on with our lives. When someone is constantly overworked or overstressed, we use this phrase, they're pushed to the brink. Or, you know, if you're trying to argue with someone or annoy them, and finally they just, you know, quit the argument or they leave, you could say, well, they were pushed to the brink. That means they were so annoyed, agitated, or angered that they just quit or they just went away because they were pushed to the brink. So the brink in this phrase is like the limit.
I told you I was on the brink.
Maybe you've had a terrible roommate at some point in your life. They left out dirty dishes, they were disrespectful, you know, they were partying at all hours of the night, and finally you were just pushed to the brink by something bad they did, and you had to move out of the house or the apartment. So when you say that you push someone to the brink, it means you push them to their limit. If you are overworked, we often use the phrase, we were pushed to the brink of exhaustion. That means we're so tired we couldn't do anything else. This next phrase is used so commonly in English, and I've heard this phrase forever, but it's a little bit difficult to describe for me because it comes so naturally in the English language. The phrase is wherewithal. And I don't see this written much in English, but in spoken English, it's used all the time. So the most classic example of this phrase is when you wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, there's something going on and you can't even think, you can't even see because you just woke up. You say, I didn't have the wherewithal to know what's going on. This just means like you're basically half asleep. You didn't have the brain power or the thinking to understand what you should do next.
Or have the wherewithal to hire someone.
Or if you want to say that someone isn't very smart, or maybe they don't have a lot of resources and, you know, they want to start a business, but you don't think they can do it, you could say they don't have the wherewithal to start a business. So I most frequently use this phrase if I am sleepy and I just can't do something. I say I don't have the wherewithal to get this done. That's the most common way I hear this phrase in English. And in contrast, you could say I was asleep, but I did have the wherewithal to wake up and, you know, get everyone out of the house or because the house is on fire or something like that. So you can use this phrase in the positive or the negative. You had the wherewithal or you didn't have the wherewithal. A common idiom in English that means that someone is too late in their actions to either be helpful or effective in a situation is we say they are a day late and a dollar short. So maybe you see someone that you really want to ask out on a date, but you wait a long time to build up the courage. And by the time you ask them on a date, they already are seeing someone, they have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You could say, well, I was a day late and a dollar short. So even though I finally built up this courage, there was no point because I was too late and I just didn't have enough courage before.
Day late and a dollar short.
So this can be just kind of a comedic or playful phrase in English too. If someone literally just shows up late and they're not going to be helpful anymore, you say, sorry, you're a day late and a dollar short. Have you ever heard someone say they got a weight off their chest? This phrase in English, it means that someone, you know, confesses a burden or they confess something that they did wrong to another person. And after telling the truth, they feel like lighter. They feel emotionally lighter. It's like a weight has been lifted from their chest. And this is what we say in English.
It's really good to get this stuff off my chest.
If you feel bad or guilty about something that you did to your friend, and you finally apologize to that friend, you might say, I'm so sorry. I hope you accept my apology. I feel like a weight has been lifted off my chest. I was so guilty before. If you want to say that someone surprised you and you don't really know like why they are showing up in that moment, in English, we say it's like they came out of the woodwork. Or if, you know, someone surprises you with an ability that you didn't know they had, you could say, well, you pulled that out of the woodwork. This just means like it's a very much a surprise. We weren't expecting the thing.
You start coming out of the woodwork to ask me stuff.
Maybe you are at your house and an old relative knocks on your door and you say, wow, you really came out of the woodwork. This means I don't know where you came from. I haven't heard about you in many years. I'm surprised to see you. It's a really common phrase in English, out of the woodwork. This next English phrase is definitely a newer one, but I think it's very common now to say this. If someone is so upset that they are actually crying and they're crying really hard, we sometimes say, I'm having an ugly cry. This phrase is more common amongst women when we are just, you know, letting all of our emotions out. We're saying, I'm having an ugly cry about this. So we're crying so hard that we look ugly. So something has gone really wrong if we are ugly crying.
I don't want to ugly cry. No one's even here to see.
Maybe a movie makes you so emotional that you can't contain your emotions enough to not look ugly and cry. So this is a specific type of crying. We're just having an ugly cry because that movie is so sad to us. In English, we don't always say, can you address that? Or can you address that topic? Oftentimes in English, we say, can you speak to that? So this phrase is very common in just everyday life and business English. If someone says, and how much money do you think we can make off of this product? And you are not the expert on money or numbers in your business, you might say, well, Jeff can speak to that. He is the numbers guy. And we say numbers guy to mean that someone that deals with the math or the economics of something in a business.
And then continue until they speak something else.
You can also use this phrase, can you speak to that, as a question to someone. You might say, well, you commented on this before. Can you speak to that? That means just, can you provide more details or more opinions on that topic? Many times in English, if someone completes something despite there being many challenges and many obstacles or problems, we can say that they completed something against all odds. This is a really awesome phrase to use when you want to compliment someone's hard work and saying that they didn't give up even when they faced the challenges. You can say, you completed this despite all odds.
And against all odds, she fixed it.
A lot of people, they feel like when they go to college, it's so difficult because maybe they don't have a lot of money, or, you know, they didn't go to a very prestigious school before, but they're learning with really smart students. I could say, I am going to finish my college degree despite all odds, or against all odds. We can also use this phrase in just everyday sports. If there is a team that probably is not going to win, but then against all odds, they win the game. We use this phrase, you know, they beat everyone against all odds. The other day, my husband said, have you seen my car keys? And I started looking all around the house. I looked everywhere. And then my husband realized his car keys were in his pocket. He sent me on what we like to call a wild goose chase. In English, when you say that you sent someone on a wild goose chase, it often means that you made them go look for something or made them try to do something, even though there was no point to doing it.
Yeah, that's a wild goose chase over here at Nakatomi Plaza.
So in this case, my husband had the keys in his pocket. He just forgot to check his pockets, which happens to everyone. And he sent me on a wild goose chase. I was looking all throughout the house, even though he had the keys all along. So there was no point in doing what I was doing. This is a really funny idiom we use. A wild goose chase to mean that we sent someone to do something even though there was no point or there was no way they could accomplish the actual thing. In this case, my husband said, I'm so sorry I sent you on a wild goose chase. Instead of saying that you really can't understand something, in English, we use the phrase, I couldn't fathom. We don't actually use the verb to fathom very often in English. But this is just a very dramatic phrase to mean like we could not understand or fathom even if we thought about the problem or the situation for a long time.
I couldn't fathom it.
So sometimes if we think that someone made a really bad decision, like maybe they left their children with a bad babysitter, you could say, I cannot fathom why they would leave their kids with Jill or whoever the bad babysitter is in this story. So it just means like you cannot understand. It's a really dramatic way of speaking. You cannot fathom. The first time I heard this phrase was in my college economics class. The phrase is, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Have you heard this phrase before? This phrase just means in English that even if something seems free, there's always a cost to your decisions.
And they say there's no such thing as a free lunch.
In economics, we use this phrase, there's no such thing as a free lunch, meaning if you go to a lunch and it's free, there's always an opportunity cost. So you could have been doing something else with your time. In everyday English, we use this phrase often to mean that even though someone's offering something for free, they're going to try to sell you something later, or you're going to owe them a favor for accepting something free right now. So maybe one of your friends says, you know, oh, I'll come and help you out. No cost. I can do it for you. Well, you'll say, well, there's no such thing as a free lunch. That means like there's kind of a catch. Do you need me to help you with something later? Are you going to ask for a favor in return? So you might hear this phrase more and more now that I have taught you there's no such thing as a free lunch. This next phrase is really common when it comes to either gambling or business situations. If someone uses the phrase to go for broke, it means they're betting everything on one situation or one possible outcome.
But in that, I learned how to take risks and go for broke.
So maybe you invest all your money in a startup business. This means a very tiny business that has the potential to make a lot of money. But if you're investing all of your money in it and they don't do well, you're going to be broke. So you're going for broke. That means you are either going to make it really rich or you're going to be broke, meaning having no money. If you describe someone as broke, that means they don't have any money to spend. Another instance you can use this phrase is if they're gambling and they bet all their money on one team. You could say, while you're really going for broke, that means if you don't win this, you are absolutely going to be broke and down to zero money. Another idiom that is used in everyday English and my students ask me about all the time is to dodge a bullet. So this just means that you have narrowly missed a mistake.
I convinced myself I dodged a bullet.
So recently, a friend of a friend took a job at a company and, you know, the company did really, really bad. It actually went out of business. Well, my friend was thinking about joining their friend at that company right before it went out of business, but then they decided not to take the job. So they really dodged a bullet there. That means they avoided a really bad, kind of dangerous, financially dangerous situation. Maybe you're going to hang out with your friend, but then you cancel plans at the last minute and it turns out your friend had the flu, even though they didn't know it at the time. You kind of dodged a bullet because if you would have hung out with them or spent time with them, you probably would have caught or been infected by their sickness. So you dodged a bullet. A really polite phrase in English is we say, don't hesitate to reach out. When we say to reach out, it means to ask for help or to ask for some information.
Feel free to reach out.
Many times when people email me and say, you know, do you have an English course that would help me improve my vocabulary? I'll say, thank you so much for reaching out. This means asking for help and contacting me. And if you do want to check out my English courses, make sure to visit englishwithkayla.com. I've got a new course that's going to be available soon for you to study more vocabulary, just like the vocabulary in this video. But the phrase, don't hesitate to reach out, is super common. That just means don't worry about asking for help. I am here to help you at all times. So it's very, very polite to say this in English, either speaking or over email. In English, when you describe someone as having a good head on their shoulders, it means they make very responsible, very moral, and very good decisions.
You used to have a good head on your shoulder before Rodney got a hold of you.
Now, if you have children, you really hope that your children's friends have good heads on their shoulders. This is just the phrase or the idiom that we use to say, like, their friends are responsible and their friends aren't a negative influence on their life. When I was a kid, my friend's dad said, you know, I'm really glad that you hang out with my daughter because you really have a good head on your shoulders. I was pretty responsible and I mostly made good decisions when I was younger, especially when I was a teenager. Now, on the contrary, if you have someone who does not have a good head on their shoulders, they are a bad influence, you can say, I want you to have nothing to do with them. So when we say, we have nothing to do with them, it means we want no association. They are not a good person.
I want nothing to do with any of you.
And we can use this phrase, I want nothing to do with them. I want nothing to do with him, her. I want nothing to do with it. Or you could even say, I want nothing to do with that. It just means you want no association in general. I am so glad that you stuck with me through this video. That means you didn't give up. And against all odds, you learned 25 new phrases in English that will help you in your everyday conversations. Make sure to visit englishwithkayla.com to learn more English with me as your teacher. And if you want to study more phrases exactly like the ones in this video, make sure to check out the two lessons on screen next. Thank you so much for watching and learning with me. I'll see you in the next lesson. Bye!